You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Bonjour, and welcome to episode 21 of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Pesetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen. Make sure that you're subscribed on iTunes to catch all our latest episodes as they drop. And remember, you can connect with us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast and also on Facebook, facebook.com/socialmediaandpoliticspodcast. All right. So if you're a subscriber to the show, you might notice that this episode comes pretty quickly after the last one. And that's because both podcasts deal with the French elections, which is taking place on Sunday, May 7th. And I didn't want to put out a podcast on Sunday like I normally do, because then the elections would have already happened. So what's the excitement in that? So if you haven't heard our last episode, it was all about which news sources citizens are sharing across social media, and some really interesting stuff in terms of alternative news and a little bit of Russian influence mixed in there as well. So be sure to check that out. But in this episode, we're going to be talking more about what's kind of the general state of the election. What would a Macron win mean for France? What would a Le Pen win mean for France? And my guest who I'm going to be interviewing is Dr. Antoine Beauvois, who is a professor emeritus at the French National Conservatory of Arts and Crafts, La CNAM. And he's been doing some interesting research looking at social media engagement and trying to predict the outcome of several different elections. So we're going to be talking with him about his experience in that, and also more generally, what's kind of the state of the elections in France just leading up to it. So double whammy on the French elections, and then for the subscribers, just to give you a heads up about what's coming up in the next couple weeks, got some really cool interviews with, first, Dr. Alan Rosenblatt, who's been working with issues at the intersection of political communication and digital technologies for over 25 years. He taught the first course on the internet and politics. So we go back and we talk about what was it like when, you know, campaigns were just setting up websites to today, and what are the similarities and differences. So that's a really interesting interview. And then currently I'm working on a research article about Snapchat and the US campaigns. So I reached out to a couple of the digital directors who were working for the campaigns in the US. And we've got an interview with Eric Wilson, who is Marco Rubio's digital director. And we're going to talk with him about how the campaign was using Snapchat. And then after that, a very similar interview with Matthew Oskowski, who was leading digital for Governor Walker's campaign. And then after Governor Walker dropped out, switched over to heading Trump's digital strategy. So we talk all about that and the work that Cambridge Analytica is doing more broadly. So definitely don't want to miss those. Subscribe to make sure you get them in your feed. And after that, I don't know what we're going to do. So if you have an idea, just drop me a line. Otherwise, I'll start emailing people and recording conversations, as this show is all about. So jumping back across the pond, as I mentioned, my guest today is Antoine Beauvois. He's a professor emeritus at the French National Conservatory of Arts and Crafts, and he's published extensively on the research themes of collective action, social capital, and democracy. You can check out his blog, where he's published a lot of the work that we're going to be talking about, at www.antoinebeauvois.blogspot.com. Dr. Beauvois joins us from the Bourgogne region of France, just outside Paris. Dr. Beauvois, thanks for taking the time out, and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Thank you for this invitation and to discuss the subject.
So not all of our listeners might be so familiar with French politics and the state of the election, although I think most people get that it's kind of a race between the mainstream Macron and the anti-establishment Le Pen. So I wanted to ask, in your view, what's this election all about? And as it's just around the corner, what are the predictions looking like at the moment?
This election shows that the French political institution face a very high level of distrust. And the French political institution, parties, government bodies, etc., are no longer legitimate in the eyes of a big majority of the French population. Mm-hmm. And both Macron and Le Pen, they surf on this problem. Le Pen in a well-established anti-establishment way, but Macron takes also profit from the lack of confidence in the main left and right government parties. And Sarkozy and Hollande, the previous presidents, They have both failed in giving answers to the important economic and social problems. And the problem is that it is not alone the political institutions that face a high legitimacy deficit, but also the media, the education bodies, the trade unions, etc. According to the last PISA survey, the French education system is the education system that is the most affected by social inequalities. Mm-hmm. In France, the school, the education is supposed to be a pillar of the Republic. And so it failed a lot. And this, with the high level of unemployment, it's an important failure for the French Republican institutions.
So by the education system being unequal, is it that the kind of privileged have access to higher education and there's a margin there? Or what do you mean?
No, what I mean is the PISA survey, they ask the pupils 15 years old to fill in a questionnaire about the family backgrounds. And they compare in each country the way education successes is related to the social status. And the results of the survey showed in 2012, and it has not changed a lot, that France has the highest degree of social inequality at schools. That is, your school career depends the highest in France from your social origins. Mm-hmm. And that's, for me, is especially a big failure because the role of the school, of l'école républicaine, is supposed to give equal chances. And it's still the ideology and the discourse and the political discourse, but it failed. It failed a lot. And we know, everybody knows that there's high unemployment, but I think there are a lot of inequalities in France. Inequalities at school, inequalities to get decent housing, and that explains the high success of extreme right, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you brought up the idea that both candidates, Macron and Le Pen, are feeding off this sense of distrust. And as I understand it, Emmanuel Macron had actually founded his own party. Is that right?
Yes. En Marche. I don't know how you. It's walking. You know, we are walking.
Yeah, like going forward or something.
Yes, something like that, yes.
And so what was the story behind that? Because he's kind of a political insider, right? He's been in the mainstream parties for some time.
Yes, he has been a counselor of the President Hollande. He has been the Minister of Economy. And he presents himself like an outsider, but he is an insider. A political insider, and he understood that remaining as a socialist, he would not have any chance to have a political career. And he understood also that the two main French parties, government parties, Socialist Party and Les Républicains on the right, they had so a high level of distrust that they are paving the roads for Marine Le Pen. But I don't know if he will stop the success of Marine Le Pen.
Mm-hmm. Because he's, right now, he's pretty comfortably ahead from what I understand, something like 20 percentage points?
Yes. The polls are forecasting that he will win the election. He should win the elections. But, you know, every observer, journalist, even political scientist, they are very cautious because there is an interrogation about the degree of participation. Mm-hmm. And the fourth candidate's party, movement, Les Insoumis from Mélenchon, they decided in a vote where more than 240,000 people participated that the two-thirds of those voters, they decided not to vote for Macron. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the polls are okay for Macron, but you never know.
Right. So in a sense, it could be that this feeling of distrust is so strong that people don't go out and vote for Macron, but the mobilized right-wing supporters of Le Pen may show up and that might tip the election. Could be.
Yes. You know, the problem is to talk about supporters because what the surveys show that many people are perhaps ready to vote for Macron, but that doesn't mean they endorse his political view. So that's the problem from the start. Also, he had a much support from the media, and I think that explains his fairly good result of the first round.
Yeah, and this is something that we're seeing in, you know, also in the United States as well, where people, they kind of feel like they don't like either candidate, so you can't bank on them showing up. So what would a Macron victory mean for France, and then what would a Le Pen victory mean for France?
First, a Macron victory would mean, above all, the defeat of Marine Le Pen. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it would mean the continuation of a political course or social liberal political course. But the problem is that the presidential election is not the end of the story. To have the full power to implement his political proposals, he will need the majority in the Assemblée Nationale, in the parliament. But nobody knows that's a big interrogation. It's the same for Marine Le Pen. Previously, Hollande and Sarkozy first, and Hollande, they won the presidential election. And then it was no point that they would have a majority in the Assemblée Nationale. But it's not sure that the same will happen this time. First, Macron, his movement, En Marche, will face the competition with the Socialist Party on the left and the France Insoumise on the left from Mélenchon. And on the right, there will be everywhere candidates of Les Républicains and, of course, of the Front National. And the same applies to Marine Le Pen because perhaps she could win this time, the presidential election, but after this victory, there could be a reaction, and she could not win the legislative elections.
Uh-huh. And so do those come after the presidential elections?
Yes, they are planned already in June.
Uh-huh. So what happens in between the presidential election and the legislative election? Is it a whole nother campaign?
Yes, it's a new campaign. In the previous presidential election, it was more or less the same campaign because the idea that was confirmed by the results of the presidential election and the legislative elections was the same. But this time, it's not so sure. Perhaps Macron will have to govern with a mixed majority of his own deputies, members of parliament, but he will need also the support of socialist members of the Assemblée Nationale and Républicain members and center members. That will make it more difficult for him to implement his political proposals.
Mm-hmm. Which is what? Is he, I get the sense that he's kind of a center-right candidate. Is that where you would put him, or does he not conform to the classic left-right distinction? What do you think?
He pretends not to conform to this classic right-left. But I think you're right. You think he's more right-center than left-center.
Got it. So we've been talking a little bit about the polls. And what I wanted to ask you about is you've been doing some really interesting research on predicting election outcomes through social media, or looking at, can social media data explain kind of the surprising victories of a couple of elections. So can you talk a little bit about the elections you've been working on so far and kind of what you've been looking at in terms of social media and public opinion?
First, I must explain that I was doing some research about extreme right, not the Front National, but other extreme right movements. We have websites with a supposed big audience. So I wanted to check what was the audience from these sites. Mm-hmm. And so I discovered the tools first for Alexa for the websites. And then somebody advised me to look at the social media. So I discovered little by little. And as the election was approaching, I decided to expand my field of interest and to follow the presidential candidates for the election. I started in the summer of 2016 and I conducted several empirical studies. I followed the two French presidential primaries The first was the right and center in November, and the second was the socialist primary in January. And I discovered that the data I got out, both the website audience and the social media data, helped to forecast possible winners. And I predicted and wrote before the election the possible victories of Fillon in the primary of the right and Hamon, Benoît Hamon, in the primary of the left. And also I looked at the presidential election in Austria, and I found the same, that Alexander Van der Bellen could win because his engagement data and his website audience was higher than those of the extreme right candidate.
Right. And I was reading a little bit of what you had written, and you approach communication on social media by measuring it in three ways, which are audience, engagement, and activity. Can you break those down for us?
Yes. So the social media data are measured in three ways: audience, as you said, audience, activity, and engagement. Audience measures the total number of followers of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and it gives the number of followers on a specific date. So if I look at the data today, I'll have the figures of yesterday. But those audience depends mainly on the past. For example, people who exerce political power, who are prime ministers, like Manuel Valls, the socialist Manuel Valls, he had always many followers. But this audience data measures the past more than the current evolution.
Like Barack Obama might have,
yes,
you know, 13 million followers on Instagram, say, but that doesn't really give a measure of his current popularity. It's kind of this past, almost kind of like celebrity status.
Yes. Like Sarkozy, he had many more followers than Fillon, and Emmanuel Valls has always many more followers than Benoît Hamon. But those data depend on the past and don't measure the effect of the political communication of a campaign like the primaries. So we have to look at the two other indicators, like activity. Though the activity is not the most interesting, but it's interesting to see how they take into account the role of social media. Because, for example, Manuel Valls, who had a high audience, he didn't care a lot about activity on social media. The same applied to Juppé. Fillon and Hamon were very active on social media.
So this is how much the campaigns or the politicians actually post.
Yes, the tool I use, SEMrush, gives precise data for Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and YouTube. But I use only three of them. And you can calculate or have the data for each day, for the seven last day, for the last 2 days, or for the last months, 3 months, etc. So it just give a measure of how active they are on the social media. But the most interesting indicator is engagement. When you post, you and me, and it's the same, like a political candidate, when we post something, we have a share, we have likes, we have retweet, we have comments, and so, and that gives the engagement data, and it's the engagement data who are the most interesting, because they measure the impact of a political communication campaign, of how they react to a video, like Jean-Luc Mélenchon. He understood the importance of YouTube, but all the social media are not of the same importance. I think there's a lot of research and measuring and forecasting by Twitter, but I think the most important is Facebook, because in France, for example, half of the French connected to internet, they use daily Facebook.
Right. And that's something also that in the field I'm working in, political communication, everyone's looking at Twitter because it's the easiest data to get. But you're right in that in France, there's actually, I think something like less than 2% is actually posting every day on Twitter.
Oh, I don't know the exact figures, but I thought it was a little bit more, but it was not so high as there are more than 20 million people posting each day on Facebook. And on Twitter, it should be about 6 million, but I had to check these data.
And when you look at these engagement rates, do you make a distinction or does this SEMrush make a distinction between like the level of activity? Like is a comment higher than a like or is a share higher than a comment?
No.
Okay.
No, they don't distinguish. But, you know, in the right primary, there was a high level of engagement for Sarkozy, but I did it sometimes. You can check, you know, the reactions. There are likes, there are love, there are angry reactions and so. And I checked from time to time for some periods and some candidates the levels of likes and love and angry. And there are some differences, but it's a lot of work. You know, I'm working in my on my own. It's a very, very big work to follow all those data.
Believe me, you don't have to tell me.
Yes.
But so you take the kind of total number of all interactions for the engagement number, which is quite a, you know, I don't mean simple, but in a sort of pejorative sense, but it's a very kind of basic level of unit of analysis.
Yes.
And you find that this is actually the most significant predictor of public opinion. And why do you think that is?
Now, first, of course, it didn't predict the first round of the presidential election, but it worked pretty well for the two primaries and for the Austrian election. So that's how I thought I was able to find it a good indicator of the evolution of political opinion. And we must not forget that the polls, they had some failures also, some big failures. And in France, for example, they didn't predict the outcome of the primaries. They didn't even try for the socialist primary after their failure for the right primary. And when they predicted the first round of the presidential election, they were always very cautious in explaining that everything could happen. So they were sure not to make a mistake. Of course, altogether, they predicted quite well that Macron and Le Pen would be the two first, but on the other hand, I think it's very difficult to analyze. But I think it has played a big role in the final outcome of the first round. That the only candidate able to win against Marine Le Pen would be Macron. That's why the socialist candidate, he lost a lot of voices. And I suppose you don't listen to the French radio and television, but they are very, very parti pris, you know? I don't know if you understand.
No, my French is not up to par, unfortunately.
Parti pris, that's an expression which means they are not neutral. They are... they explain, and it still goes on. It's really astonishing to listen to radio and television because, of course, they all prefer Macron over Marine Le Pen, but it's presented in a way that I don't. You know, it's part of the problem of the distrust, of the lack of trust in French institutions, because the media lack a lot of trust from the French population. And that explains also the success of the social media. And there is I don't know how it is in Denmark, but most of the social media, of the analyzers of social media, they present it as the way of presenting fake news.
Right.
I think it's an error. Of course, it's There's a lot of fake news, but I think it was also present on the traditional media. And it's not only fake news. The problem is the distrust in all the political institutions in a large way, political media, school, justice, and so on.
Right. So you're saying that the media are presenting the coverage of the election in this very kind of biased or partisan sense, right? And that's feeding that distrust. And social media is kind of a arena for counter narratives, which for our listeners, our previous episode is all about this in the French election. But it's interesting because I think in Denmark, it's kind of a special case because you still have a very high trust in institutions. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are still critical of politicians and the political class, but there's a general high sense of civic duty, which you also have in France, I suppose. But there's still a very high trust in government institutions and the welfare state. I mean, that's kind of a shared feature of Scandinavian countries. And there's a high trust in public broadcasting as well. So I think that kind of maybe limits a little bit the fake news, but I think the same dynamics are at play. But what I wanted to ask you is that in the first round, your engagement prediction had Mélenchon as going into the runoff with Le Pen. And that race was pretty close. I mean, Le Pen had 21% and Mélenchon had something like 19 or 20. So you weren't that far off. But how do you interpret that? Because Le Pen had really high engagement, and she finished second, whereas Macron had low engagement but finished first. Do you think it's that the Le Pen supporters were overly active on social media and then didn't show up? Or was it the other way around, that Macron had a very good offline ground game and sort of traditional mobilization that he was able to outperform his social media engagement? Or how do you interpret all of this?
It's a difficult question. It's difficult to explain why this time the same data had compared to the three case studies previously conducted different signification. So what I can say that at the end of nearly a year of research on this subject, I would say that the variation of the social media data are the produce of three different processes. The first is the one, it would be easy if it measures only a contagion process. That's if the data are growing, the political influence of a candidate or a party is growing. But there is a second process I named the boiling process. It's the result of the more or less artificial mobilization of political activists in favor of the candidate or party. And that's increased by the use of tools like Nation Builder.
Right. And these are bots, right?
No, not. That's the third process. That's what I named the fake process. Mm-hmm. And the increase of the audience and the engagement is provoked by the use of false accounts, robots, and click farms. Mm-hmm. But that's our three processes. And you refer to the boiling process. I think the data of Mélenchon, I first made the hypothesis that he had a lot of fake accounts. But I checked, you know, I don't know if you know Audit Twitter or Twitter Audit. Mm-hmm. You know that I checked for, unfortunately, there is no such a tool for Facebook, but I checked the percentage of real accounts and fake accounts for the four main candidates on Twitter Audit. And I found that the percentage of real accounts for Mélenchon is the highest, 76%. I was a little bit surprised because I thought it would be not the highest. And the lowest was for Macron.
Uh-huh.
Yes, the lowest on Twitter Audit of percentage of real accounts is 64% for Macron. And Fillon and Le Pen had 68%. I first made the hypothesis that the score of Mélenchon was due to the amount of fake accounts. So it's not really the case for Twitter. And so I think that more than it's a boiling process. It's the result of an active mobilization of his activists. But I wanted to thank you for your question on social capital, because
let's get into that. I just want to comment that I think it's quite surprising that the Mélenchon with the highest degree of real accounts is only at 76%. Suggesting that one quarter of the most real followers are fake. So pretty low numbers for fake accounts across the board, I would say. But yeah, because I wanted to ask you about social capital, because this is something that you've been working with in academia. And I think it's something that's really relevant for social media. So how do you think it fits in with social media?
It fits in first because, I don't know if you know, but in French, we don't speak about social media or médias sociaux, but we speak about réseaux sociaux, social networks. Mm-hmm. And the concept, the notion of social network is much larger than social media. But nowadays, even if in academic literature, when you speak about social networks, it means social media. And the social networks are the heart of the social capital notion. So I use the social capital in the way Robert Putnam defines it, as social networks and the norms of reciprocity and trustworthiness that arise from them. It's a quotation. So social networks and norms, and certain norms of what he calls general reciprocity. Mm-hmm. And social capital enables collective action as it promotes social trust and reciprocity. But to come back to the question about the results and the different signification of the engagement data, I think the distinction, the social capital helps because suppose you know that Robert Putnam distinguished bonding and bridging social capital, like Granovetter distinguished strong and weak ties. And I think the social capital of Macron is more a bridging social capital, a more weak ties. And the social capital for Mélenchon is more a bonding social capital and strong ties. And that's, I think that would be an hypothesis to explore, to understand what happened in this election. I think when I refer to a boiling process for Mélenchon, and it's more a contagion process for Macron, I think it's related to a more bonding social capital for Mélenchon, strong ties, not so much strong ties because they know each other and they interact closely with each other, but because they have a high degree of sharing values. That's the norms of reciprocity, the role of the state, and so on. On the other hand, I think the values of the followers of Macron are much more diversified.
So, and it kind of relates, I think, to what you were talking about with the lack of trust in institutions among the French. So is it that social media is seen as a way to kind of build trust when the trust isn't there, the institutions?
Yes, it's not a way to build trust, or it's a way to build trust, but it's not so much a way to build trust as to assemble those who share the same way of viewing the society.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like a mobilization.
Yes, who trust the same institutions, like trusting Europe, for example, the European Union, or trusting the same values as the market. I don't know if it creates trust, but it's sharing trust in the same values. Perhaps it plays in the both directions.
Huh? Right, and that it makes me wonder about bots or these kind of automated programs, chatbots. I mean, how do you think they fit into this? Is it just that they're a kind of contagion element, that they're sort of a diffusers of propaganda or information or whatever? Or can a sort of chatbot that's programmed to interact with people, can it kind of take the place of humans in that kind of network?
I don't know. I don't think so. But
yeah, it's all speculative at this point. But
you know, your question made me remind, and I checked to find the exact quotation, that Putnam was a little bit, you know, he wrote his book Bowling Alone in 2001 before the expansion of social media. But he wrote something I always remember on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. Mm-hmm. He didn't believe we could build social capital on the internet, but it was before the expansion of social media, and it was in 2001. So I don't know what he would write, say, today. But nowadays, we would say no one knows you're a bot. And I think bot and chatbots, they produce fake social capital. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you have to pay for it. I don't think it fits with the concept of social capital, because bots, they don't share values. You can program them, of course. It's a difficult question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's something that really has just exploded. Really, people are only becoming aware of the potential of these bots and botnets over the past year or two. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lots of unexplored things there. But in terms of your research and looking at these engagement rates and the social media activity, are you going to continue after the French elections? Do you have any plans for that?
Yes, I started following the British, the UK elections. I didn't talk about that, but I also followed the Dutch elections. And it didn't work quite well. I think there is a difference between presidential elections on one name, on several candidates, and legislative elections where you vote, like in France or in the UK, for 500 different electoral districts. And so it's 500 different solutions. But the first data were not coherent with the polls for the UK, because I checked the polls. The Conservatives are leading very far before the Labour Party, and the engagement data are in favor of the Labour Party. I should advise you to of course it's in French, but there's been a lot of work. I think the problem is that on the social media, the researchers have privileged Twitter because it's more accessible data. In France, there has been a lot of work to analyze the political communication. There is a site. I made a short article on my blog about the Politoscope. They analyzed the millions of tweets and they analyzed the content of political communication, and they did a great job. It's very interesting. But I don't know. I will go on testing it with the British and the German elections. But I asked Semrush if they had any ways to detect the fake accounts. The response they gave me is no. That's one of Semrush who told me about Twitter audit. But not such a tool exists for Facebook. So it's a real problem. And I think that there's work for tens and for young people. And
we're on it.
and you know, it's one of the interesting things is that in France, there's much skepticism for my work.
Mm, how do you mean?
But they don't believe it from the start. You know, they don't. I proposed an article for the French Review of Sociology on the big data, but they refused my article, and with an argumentation which was not very very to the point. They are skeptic. I read some articles in Le Monde. They were very skeptical about how can we use social media data to predict, to forecast the election results.
Do you think there's a an attitude or a perception among these reviewers or among the sort of established academics in France that that social media data isn't valuable or isn't, it's just a bunch of fluff. Is that your thinking?
I don't know how it is in Denmark and in other countries, but in political scientists in France, they work a lot with and for polling institutions. Mm-hmm. So they are used to use polling data, and they have some difficulty to change. I heard about that in the UK after the failure of the Brexit polling, there was a meeting between polling institutes and academics to examine the problem, the issue. But not such a thing happened in France, I think. Perhaps I don't know everything, but I don't know how it is in Denmark. I would be interested.
Yeah, I think the general consensus at the moment is that social media data can tell us a lot about elections, especially as you mentioned, also in terms of the content. Mm-hmm. Of what's being said. But I think the general idea is that it's not enough in and of itself because of these fake accounts, mm-hmm. et cetera. So researchers are working on ways to combine traditional polling data with social media data in order to get a better understanding of what the complexities are. Because as you said, there's so many people who are using Facebook every day. But I think the bigger question that's really on the forefront of the field at the moment is less and less people are posting publicly mm-hmm. on Facebook, on these different campaign pages. They're moving into Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, mm-hmm. these dark social networks. And so then the question is, how reliable is this public social media data versus, you know, the conversations that are happening on non-public channels? So how representative is the public data? I mean, I think 5 years ago, maybe it was very much, but it seems more people are becoming more privacy conscious and trying to kind of encrypt their communication, for example. So it's a difficult question.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like Mélenchon, he uses Discord.
What is that?
Oh, it's it's an alternative social media where you can not get public. The sum of the discussion is public, and some journalists, they succeeded in infiltrating some discussions. And it's the problem you tell. Discord, I think it's a tool, and it's not a French tool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just so many of these things these days. It's tough to keep track of all of them.
I remain, I think that nevertheless, Facebook can be a good reflection because it's only the most militant people who go secretly.
Right, right. The activists and the hardcore supporters.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, lots of things to think about. But Dr. Brevard, thanks so much for your insights. And I'll be following your predictions for the UK elections.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot.
I've just been speaking with Dr. Antoine Brevard, Professor Emeritus in Sociology at Lucknow. You can check out his blog, where he posts a lot of his predictions, at www.antoinebrevard.blogspot.com. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. Let's see what happens with these French elections on Sunday. Next week, I'll be releasing my interview with Dr. Alan Rosenblatt. And until then, make sure you follow us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast and swing by our Facebook page, facebook.com/socialmediaandpoliticspodcast.